One of the wildest ways you can make beer is with spontaneous fermentation. Now, this is where an infant beer is exposed to the open air with its wild yeasts. If you have control issues, this approach is not for you. But for brewers who like rolling the dice, those yeasts are the roller coaster ride of the brewing world. Greg Engert is one of them, a champion brewer in Washington, D.C., who's been experimenting with spontaneous fermentation quite a bit. He spoke with our contributor, Rebecca Shear, about what it's like to brew beer while being at the mercy of the elements.
Hi, Greg. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
So first things first, how does spontaneous fermentation work?
Well, it works just like any fermentation. It's just one that happens wildly and will happen without, you know, a brewer intending for it to necessarily happen. I always like to talk about, you know, when you're in college, you know, I'm not saying that any of us ever did this, of course, but if you happen to leave like a can of beer out overnight and then just tasted it the next day to see if it was okay, it would typically have developed a kind of vinegary note. And that's because swimming around us unseen every day all the time are billions and billions of cells of bacteria, yeasts that are all starving for sugar sources. So if you leave your can of beer out or your wine, you forget to cork it, it turns to vinegar because there's a particularly hungry yeast in the air called Acetobacter that will jump in the presence of oxygen. It's an aerobic bacteria and pretty quickly metabolize any remaining sugars into acetic acid, which is what we call vinegar. So spontaneous fermentation is something that can happen all the time. And if kind of controlled a little bit, it can produce some amazing flavors.
How do you control it?
So there's a number of ways that they go about this. And I think the first part is what kind of grains you use. Okay, so using kind of grains that are filled with complex starches will make sure that certain bacteria and certain yeasts can't metabolize those sugars. They just can't handle how complex they are. Another way is to only brew these beers in the cooler months. Because one of the things that happens with these beers is after you boil them, were you to expect anything to naturally occur immediately, it won't, because the wort itself, the sugar water, is too hot. So if you do that in the cooler months, you get the stuff you want. And if you do it in the warmer months, you might get too much acidity. You might get too much funk. And then finally, you're going to age this now cooled off, starting to spontaneously ferment wort, which is the sugar water, in oak barrels. And over time, we're going to make sure that even as the beer is fermenting in oak and all the other wild yeast bacteria in the barrels are working, there's going to be some evaporation. And so the levels, we call this the angel share, the levels of the beer itself are going to drop. We want to keep that oxygen out or else we're going to get vinegar. And we do that by literally just adding more beer on top.
Wow, that is fascinating. Well, you've brought some beers along with you today, some of these sour beers, these lambics we're talking about. Can you talk us through what you've brought, and then let's taste some?
Sure. The first one is from a blender named DeCam. The blender himself, his name's Carl Godot, and he's a brewer at a brewery called Schleichmulder in Belgium, but then his weekend job is blending spontaneously fermented lambic. So this is a beer that was actually bottled in 2012. It's called DeCam Oda Lambic, spontaneously fermented, and then aged in oak barrels where it continues to ferment, because all those wild yeasts and ale yeasts and lager yeasts and bacteria that are in the air are also in the oak barrels because, you know, oak has sugar in it. And so these wild yeast and bacteria will feed on the oak until a new sugar source presents itself. So once we get this lambic into barrel, it's going to continue over the next, in this case, 3 years to develop sour flavors, funky flavors, and pick up some nice oaky tannins and vanillins as well.
And the color is beautiful.
It's beautiful. You'll see it's a little bit darker gold, and a lot of that comes from the oak itself.
And quite an aroma.
Yes.
With a lot of other beers I've tried.
Intense aroma. And you also notice that it's not carbonated. This is actually blended from three-year-olds, and then it is not re-fermented in bottles. So it's still, but with the amount of acidity we have from this, it's like with wine. It doesn't need carbonation because it's naturally uplifting on the palate from its natural acidity.
Let's give it a taste. Ooh. That funkiness you're talking about.
Yeah.
Definitely there.
This is tart. It's obviously more sour than, your IPA or something that, you know, is quite hoppy and bitter. But it's got this really, really well-integrated acidity. You get the tannins, that kind of woodsy drying quality from the oak. But everything's in balance. And I think it's wonderful. And I don't think it needs carbonation. I think it's wonderful as a still beer.
All right, let's taste one more.
This is a fruited lambic from Pierre Tilquin. He's also a blender, so he buys this spontaneously fermented beer from other brewers, and then he ages it in his barrels, blends it together, and then in this case, this is called Tilquin Quetch, which is a plum lambic. So you're going to taste those kind of funky, wild, mildly tart, drying, oaky flavors that we tasted in the Decam Oda lambic. But now you're going to have this really interesting influence of plum. So he steeps this spontaneously fermented beer on plums, which is very interesting.
Oh, I taste the fruit. I definitely taste the fruit.
And beautifully, you know, it's a great reminder that fruit's not sweet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so as in steeping this, the wild yeast and the bacteria continue to ferment a lot of the sugars of the plum, but they leave a lot of that color. So you get this beautiful kind of light, almost like violet gold color coming through. And the aromatics of the plum work in nicely with that kind of perfumed earthy note. But then on the palate, it's got this plum-like juiciness that is so incredible. And I really wanted to pour this for you because I think a lot of times when people think of lambic, they think of sweet fruit lambics. Brewers like Lindemann's and Bellevue, Detroc, these brewers from the same region, they make spontaneously fermented beer, but in order to survive throughout most of the 20th century, when people weren't interested in sour beer, they weren't interested in funky, wild, beers that were reminiscent of barnyards and horses and things like that, they were looking for something that was a little bit more simple and direct and, frankly, more like soda pop. And so what they would do is they'd take their funky beer, they'd filter it, they'd pasteurize it, they'd add fruit juices and syrups, sweeten it out, and then sell it as creek, which is cherry lambic, or framboise, which is raspberry lambic. Luckily today, the traditional lambics are coming back, so we have unfiltered, unpasteurized, all natural, dry, tart, and aromatically complex lambics from a number of producers.
So these beers, they're so different, they're so wild compared with a lot of the more mainstream beers we have. If we go to a bar and we want to order this kind of beer, we just ask for a sour beer?
I think, yeah, nowadays that's probably your best bet. The thing about these real lambics from Brussels and the Pays-Andeland is that they're getting increasingly rare and hard to find. Luckily, though, our burgeoning American craft beer scene is picking up the slack and producing a host of sour, funky beers, some spontaneously fermented, others just deliberately fermented with wild yeast and bacteria. So yeah, if you're out at a bar, just ask to see their sour list and you're going to find something that you like.
Will they be impressed that I'm asking for a sour beer?
Yes, in fact, they will be impressed.
So these beers that you're pouring today, you're serving them in wine glasses. Is that typical with this kind of beer?
It is, actually. And to be honest, I mean, any beer that is well made and filled with, you know, beautiful complexity belongs in a wine glass as well as any wine. You get to swirl, you get to focus aromas with that glass, really dig in with your nose and pick up the bouquet. Certainly these beers that are so complex and alluring, they really benefit from being in a wine glass.
Well, Greg, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today and for bringing along your lambics.
Thank you.
Greg Engert practices spontaneous fermentation as the beer director for the Neighborhood Restaurant Group in Washington, D.C. Rebecca Shear is host of Metro Connection on WAMU in Washington, D.C. Now, you can find a list of those beers they tasted as well as a guide that Greg wrote especially for us. It's an insider's guide to spontaneous fermentation at splendidtable.org.